Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Game on 2FM.
It's Monday, the 6th of April.
Coming up today, Irish soccer's succession is complete, but has it been a success?
It's been brilliant. I've loved being back. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. It's been an absolute pleasure and an honour to do the job again. And I think, you know, I'm leaving Stephen with a healthy balance, to be quite honest.
It's never happened before where you've got Euro playoffs, Nations League and World Cup qualifiers in the same calendar year. 9 games between September and November. An incredible schedule and very, very exciting. You know, we've a lot to look forward to.
The Tullet Tank is doing his bit to help our frontline heroes. We catch up with the selfless Sean O'Brien.
Couldn't find it. Now he gets it from Davis. Daly back onside. Davis again. And what a try coming up for Sean O'Brien. That is brilliant.
Oh, wow. Is it what?
Plus, but breaking news that the Open has been cancelled and the Masters has been rescheduled for November. We catch up with Lee Westwood.
Game on 2FM.
All that and much more between Ireland and Gartland at 7 p.m. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Marie, Ruby, how are we doing?
Wonderful. You?
Great.
Wonderful, I love it.
It's just been another weekend of, I don't know, Groundhog Days?
What did you do? Marie, you surely got up to something.
No, I had planned on watching the second season of Sunderland Till I Die, and then I found out that my husband had watched it without me.
Oh, wow. Billy, there's no helping Billy, like.
No,
like
he just He just can't help himself, can he?
Yeah, because we're going against the lad code where you kind of go, oh, that can happen, but no, you can't.
Not during a pandemic. Like, there's supposed to be solidarity and unity, and we know we're all in this together.
Yeah. We can't fight this one for you, Billy.
Yeah. No. So we watched the test on Amazon Prime about the Australian cricket team, and it is absolutely fantastic television. Ever since their ball tampering scandal, they had been they'd been painted in a really bad light, but they kind of redeemed themselves with this documentary, and you got to see just everything that went on with the team, and it's really, really, really good television. I'd recommend it.
We started Drive to Survive and struggling to get into it a little bit, really. It's a bit slow.
Wow, I thought I had a bad weekend, but it's way better than yours. We watched, you know, like The Lion King, the cartoon, and then you watch The Lion King where they've the animals. And then we did the same with The Jungle Book, Aladdin, and kept going with the Disney movies. It sounds way better than yours.
We had a 6-year-old birthday party. That was good crack, honestly.
It always is.
So it was.
Were you playing games?
Well, I was fairly happy that we have 4 kids in the Walsh household. At least there was fun and entertainment for the party.
That's true, actually. Yeah, but it's handy having siblings because then you've someone to sing happy birthday and play the games past the parcel.
Yeah.
Well, I'm telling you.
It's a bit unfortunate for Jake O'Callaghan, though. He's watching Disney movies painting his nails at the moment, so he needs a few outside influences. He needs sport to be back on the telly.
Oh my god. Poor Jake. I cannot believe you just said that on national radio. I feel so sorry for that child.
Yeah, don't worry, it'll toughen him up.
I was very excited today to read that the German football club teams are back training. They're going behind closed doors. They're training in small groups. They have banned tackles and hugs and greetings, but they are back training, and I think it's good to see Bayern Munich are one of the teams, and they detailed what they've been doing. They go home afterwards. They have their showers at home. They have their food at home. They're playing in little groups. Lewandowski and Müller and Neuer were all there together today, which is a nice kind of picture to paint that, you know, that they are gearing towards some sort of sport, which is good.
Yep. We've become massive fans of the Bundesliga yet, so we will. Anything will do. Give us hope.
It's been tough without it, and I know that there has been some football on in different countries, like the Belarusian League was one that a lot of people were looking towards. And I did see a report today about a Cork punter who turned 50 cent into 3 grand from watching very strange football leagues.
Wow. Don't tell the people dedication. Stuff like this.
That does happen. But we have a guest on the line who I saw produce a lucky 15 or a treble or something at Cheltenham 2 years ago and collect a huge sum of money as well. He's better known as a golfer, but he's a pretty shrewd punter as well. Lee Westwood, how are you?
I'm all right, Ruby. How are you?
Good, not a bother, thank God. A lot of news in golf today. No Open, but the Masters has been rescheduled. You did qualify, having finished fourth to Shane Lowry in Portrush this year. You must be at least looking forward to that.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, obviously disappointed about the Open Championship, but I think they made the right decision in the end. And then, you know, the other three have been rescheduled for August, September, and then, like you say, the Masters in November. So that'll be different going to Augusta that time of year. No azaleas. But I'm sure it'll still be green and pristine and not a blade of grass out of place, and they'll still have a great field. And on that Sunday night, somebody will still be excited to slip that green jacket on.
No doubt they will. Will it be much different temperature-wise, Lee, in November rather than April?
Yeah, I was talking to a friend who lives in Atlanta, and they said it'll be dark at 5 o'clock at night, and it'll be chilly in the morning and probably a little bit chilly towards the evening. So, yeah, they're going to probably tee us off early because of the short daylight hours. So, you know, playing that first hole first thing in the morning with a bit of a chill. Be a nice drive and a rescue up there for an old lad like me.
It's actually quite appealing to think that we'll be sitting there in November with the fire on in the winter time watching you play golf in the Masters.
Yes, speak for yourself. I'll have four layers on. It'll be like playing. No, it'd be nice to get back to playing golf and giving everybody at home something to watch, won't it?
That's the main thing, really, isn't it? And we've been talking about it for the last few weeks. It's just trying to get back to normality in some sort of way, because I think we're all going a little bit crazy. But what have you been up to during this time, Lee?
I've been going crazy with the rest of you, really. I've been spending a lot of time on my Peloton bike to try and keep my weight in check, because all I feel like doing is sitting and eating and drinking. Doing a jigsaw. I'm a master at a jigsaw puzzle now. And sleeping a lot. It's amazing how your body shuts down when there's nothing to do.
Yeah. Lee, we also saw on your Instagram you're practicing with your wife. You're chipping out the back garden.
Fiance, really.
Oh, sorry.
Future wife. Now, you know, my wedding was scheduled for the week they've moved the PGA Championship to, so I've got an interesting conversation to have, haven't I?
Oh, whoa.
And it was due to be in Ireland as well, wasn't it?
It was going to be at Adair Manor, yeah. So.
How do you handle that, Lee?
I'm going to have to put gloves on.
I didn't even think about that. I didn't even think of the dynamic for sports people. Because it's a tight window, isn't it?
Yeah, it was meant to be a clear week. The week after the Olympic Games and the week after the British Masters, I'm hosting it closed out. So, you know, it was all clear and free. And now they're going to put a major right smack bang in the middle of the week. So, but no, back to your question, Ruby. What was your question?
My question was actually, I'm just wondering about you in the cold playing golf. I feel sorry for you poor golfers having to go out in the cold. I mean, it must be so unusual for you.
It's not, no. There's worse things to do, isn't there? You know, I'm accustomed to getting. I live in Newcastle, so, you know, it rarely does it get warm up here. And I'm used to throwing a few layers on, an extra pair of socks, and getting out there and trying not to thin it and have it vibrate through my hands.
Now, Lee, there's been a bit of clarity with the PGA as to what they're going to do. The European Tour is still very much up in the air, but the Ryder Cup has still been scheduled for September time. Any idea what will happen with qualification and etc. for that?
I haven't really. You know, I've spoken to a few people and they're just playing a waiting game, really, you know, wondering when this thing is going to finally be over. Because all these plans are all well and good, but we don't know, you know, what kind of the time frame of all this, is still, we're just guessing, aren't we? So, you know, the Ryder Cup, yeah, still scheduled for September that same week, but qualification, I don't know. There's been rumour of 12 picks, 6 picks, keep the teams as they are. I don't know the answer to it. Unfortunately, I don't have to make a decision on it, but hopefully I'll be there playing or in a vice-captaincy role or something, but obviously I'd rather be playing. It'll be interesting because it's such a tough week. The week before that, now is the US Open. It's going to be two big weeks back to back.
Obviously, you'd love them to stay the way they are. You're qualified at the minute. You're in about ninth place, I think, are you?
Yeah, I'm in ninth place. So I'm an automatic qualifier at the moment. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen, when we're going to start playing golf again, which tournaments it's going to be, which week they're on. So, you know, it really is, you know, unpredictable.
You had a great start to 2020 winning in Abu Dhabi. Like, did you feel like you were building a bit of momentum and this unfortunate outbreak probably doesn't suit you, or are you happy enough to have a break?
Well, I was playing some great golf. Obviously, I won in Abu Dhabi and then I finished fourth in the Honda in Florida 2 weeks before all this happened. So, yeah, I was playing good. But, you know, the last two or three years, I haven't played a lot between February and May anyway because, you know, of my ranking. I've now moved up in the world rankings and I would be in the Masters, I would have been in the Masters and stuff like that. But, you know, so this is not really much different for me. I've normally had breaks this time of year and gone to places like Cheltenham and Aintree and Punchestown, Ruby.
Yeah, you enjoyed yourself in those places too.
I do. I've been pretty lucky. Yeah, yeah. And you know, I love the horses. So yeah, it's been my ambition to go to the three of those, and I managed to do it over the last couple of years. Yeah. So it's a shame not to be at Cheltenham this year, but I'm sure you know there's a chance I'll be there next year.
Obviously, you had a winner in Cheltenham with your dad a couple of years back as well. Have you any horses in training at the moment?
I've got about six in training. Yeah, three over the jumps and three on the flat. So it's a nice balance, yeah. I'm like, all punters and also race owners, you know, wondering when it's all going to start up again. End of May, beginning of June's been mentioned, but, you know, I just can't see it. I think, you know, it's way too optimistic that. I think we've got to give this horrible virus time to, we've got to get rid of it before we get back too soon, I think.
And just on having that kind of, I suppose, hobby in a way, having horses and training, Ruby probably disagree with me now, but it must be nice having that distraction when professional sport can be so intense.
It is. You know what? The problem is when you're a golfer, you've got all these jockeys and rugby players and footballers and cricketers, they all play golf to get away from their sport. And when you're a golfer, you can't... I do play golf, you know, to get away from it. I play with my mates, but... you know, it's nice to put the clubs away and do something else. So horse racing is one of the few things you can actually do. So yeah, I mean, it is a really good distraction for me. I love going to watch the horses on the gallops and race meetings. It's fantastic.
Ruby, what's your distraction?
Playing golf pretty poorly actually is my distraction. Although I have been lucky enough to play at the Masters where Lee is a. The British Masters, where Lee is a member in Close House, which Graham Wiley owns. Had a bit of fun in that a couple of times, all right, but my distraction is finding golf balls is how I play golf.
You see, the thing is, when you retire like Ruby has now, he's going to be playing more and more golf, so he's just going to get better, but I'll bet you his handicap stays exactly where it is.
What do you mean by that now?
No, come on, he's got Lee, you've got
You jockeys are all the same. You're all playing off dodgy handicaps. Tony McCoy's the worst.
Yeah, which, look, you have to be... Look, if you're going to make the odd mistake, you have to have a few shots in hand. I mean, come on. Surely you can give us that.
There you go. Throwing a provision in there.
In the note.
So, Lee, just on the performance, you did mention that you're playing such good golf. What are you putting it down to?
Just a more relaxed attitude, I think. You know, I'm 47 in a couple of weeks and, you know, I've done a lot of things in the game of golf that I'm proud of. Everybody mentions I haven't won a major. But, you know, I've learned to ignore that now and, you know, just go out and enjoy myself and not worry about where it goes and worry about the next shot and, you know, just enjoy, you know, doing what I love for a living. You know, I've been lucky that this is my 28th season, so I've been doing it for a long time now. It's a longer career than most people, you know, most professionals in any sport can expect to have. So I've been very fortunate.
I'm very consistent. But just on the people saying to you about not winning at the major, can you make a decision to ignore that or do you need to kind of go through a process to get to that stage?
You try and make a decision to ignore it, but it crops up. So, you know, you've got to train yourself to ignore it, really. You know, I see a psychologist. I've done for a few years now and, you know, he's given me a better attitude and a different way of looking at things. So, you know, all that's helped.
You mentioned there when you said about the Ryder Cup, maybe, hopefully as a player, maybe as a vice captain. Could you see yourself, or would you want to be the captain of the Ryder Cup team?
Yeah, I'd love to be the captain. You know, sooner rather than later. While I'm still playing with the guys that are going to be on my team, you know, I've already said that I'd love to do it in Italy in a couple of years' time, and you know, I want to do it on home soil. And, you know, I've played under 10 captains, been vice captain to Thomas. So I've seen a lot of captains do it their way, and, you know, picked a lot of things up along the way. So yeah, I'll be looking forward to doing it myself and you know, implementing some of those ideas.
Of those 10 captains you played under, did any one of them do something that you thought, yeah, that was cool, I do that?
Yeah, there were quite a few that did interesting things. You know, Paul McGinley obviously was a very good captain, had his own way of doing certain little things, ways of talking to players, ways of setting up the team room. Bernard Langer was very good. Thomas Bjorn from the last one was excellent, had his own way of doing different stuff. And there's a lot of statistics now, you know, thrown around. When I first played Ryder Cup under the Seve Ballesteros at Valderrama, it didn't seem as sort of technical as it is now. Now there's more data thrown around and statistics and things like that, and profiling done and things. So it's definitely moved on over the years.
Just on the Ryder Cup, I know you mentioned before that without fans it wouldn't be the same, but as kind of the weeks are progressing and we see the majors moving as well, do you think that later in the year you are going to be playing golf without fans there?
Well, at the Ryder Cup, I do hope not. I think, you know, I've always said the crowd, you know, make a Ryder Cup. You can virtually play it anywhere. If you've got 25,000 screaming fans around a hole, then, you know, they create the atmosphere, and it really is electric when they play. And, you know, one of the first things that any player that's played a Ryder Cup ever says is the atmosphere was amazing, and the atmosphere on the first tee was amazing. And that just comes from there being a crowd, passionate crowd there. So I just can't picture somebody holding the winning putt to win a Ryder Cup and turning to the stand and not being anybody in it and nobody applauding or cheering or screaming. Just wouldn't seem right. So I do hope they play it in front of a crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be incredibly oddly. Just on the stats you mentioned there for the Ryder Cup, is that in your individual game as well, or is it just the case of when you come together, everyone's trying to outgun each other and you know, look to impress in a Ryder Cup setup?
Yeah, they kind of analyse everybody's game, the 2 years of qualifying, you know, that goes into it, and, you know, see how they play and see their strengths and weaknesses and try and match it up with other players. So you haven't got two people playing together that have got opposite games. Because we as golf professionals, we look at our games and sometimes we get the wrong idea of how we play. We kid ourselves that this is how, you know, how we see ourselves wanting to play, but the statistics don't really prove that. So try and get all the statistics together and show as a fact how somebody plays and then match it up with somebody who's got a similar game for the foursomes and the fourballs.
And looking at those stats, what did you factually learn about your own game that you thought you weren't doing or you were doing?
I always thought I was a great driver of the golf ball, but it turned out, you know, a couple of years ago I was missing a lot of fairways, so I'm not doing that now. I'm driving the ball a lot better, so that really helped me to find out those stats. I always thought it was like a machine in all the fairways, and I wasn't.
So you, out of being in the Ryder Cup team, you found that out and were able to improve your own golf. It's obviously come back to where it is now. Did you pick anything else out of it that maybe might have helped you?
I'm a much better putter than I or anybody else thinks I am as well, and I've got a much better short game than I know it sounds strange because I got to world number one, so you'd think there wouldn't be any weaknesses in there at all, but you kind of kid yourself that maybe you don't hold enough putts or you don't get it up and down as often as you should. But the statistics actually said that I was one of the better putters on the team. So, you know, all these, you kind of kid yourself in your own mind a lot of the time.
And given the situation we're in now, you wouldn't want to ride a cup behind closed doors, but would you take an ordinary golf competition behind closed doors?
It's a little bit easier to imagine, but I still think it'd be a bit strange. But I could see, you know, like the first couple of events, maybe just to ease into it, being behind closed doors, yeah.
Less pressure, less noise. But I hope whenever it does start up again that you're as successful as you have been in the past. The best of luck with Helen breaking the tour, that your wedding is not going to take place when it's supposed to. You'll enjoy that conversation, I'm sure. And thanks a million for taking our call.
We're going to have that discussion from a long way. You know, we're going to keep that social distance in. Yeah, not to 2 metres, but to about 25 metres so I can run away.
Do it by Zoom, V.
Yeah, I should do. Or Skype it.
Yeah. Be a good idea.
Well played, yeah.
Mind yourself, Lee. Thanks a million.
Good luck, Lee. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Donegal, could you imagine going home to say, I'm very sorry, but the wedding is not on?
But, Ruby, I didn't even think of it. There is so many sports players like that now. There's so many weddings planned for that short. Like, there is probably a kind of 10-day period where all the rugby players get married and you nearly have to negotiate the time.
Same in racing. For jump jockeys, there's a period just after the Irish National with no race, and then the very same thing. So there'll be a lot of plans to be adjusted and changed.
And we
How would you take that, Marie?
We thought Billy was in trouble, Marie.
As long as I knew, I had a bit of notice. Reschedule, it'll be fine. If it was last minute now, I wouldn't be happy. But
it's fairly last minute now, though, if you were getting married in June, isn't it?
Sporting careers are short, though, so, I mean...
Yeah.
You might as well.
Westwood.
We should get you to ring them all.
Do you know what I was fascinated about, or what I really enjoyed, was that the point that he made about sports stars being able to go off and play golf, but golfers can't do that.
Yeah, I never thought of that.
It's brilliant.
You know...
What's
he do? He's a good. I tell you what he is, though. He does go racing a fair bit, and when he came to Punchestown, he really enjoyed himself. But he's a good punter as well. He's a shrewd judge of form. I'll give him his due.
I wonder would he give us tips, Donegal.
Getting them from him than me. I know that.
We could do with someone to give us a few tips.
Yeah.
Okay, let's turn our attention to football, because we had some news over the weekend, which for many sports-starved people, it was very exciting. Stephen Kenny took the reins at senior level, and Mick McCarthy departed. So to go through all of the latest news, we are joined by RTE soccer correspondent Tony O'Donoghue, soccer journalist David Snaid, and RTE soccer pundit and former Republic of Ireland assistant manager Liam Brady. Guys, you're all very, very welcome. Tony, I'm going to go to you first, because now that the dust has settled on the deal, it has thrown up a few complications, and the focus is very sharply on Robbie Keane's contract situation. What has been happening there, Tony?
Yeah, it's a little unfortunate, I think, on Robbie Keane. You know, all-time record goal scorer and all-time caps appearance, that suddenly the focus is on him. He looked for the job to be assistant to Mick McCarthy. He was given a contract. His contract, it turns out, was 2 years longer than Mick McCarthy. So that leaves the FAI once again in another conundrum. And although they've received rightly praise for the speed in which and the clarity in which they brought to the Mick McCarthy-Stephen Kenny situation, to leave Robbie Keane's situation hanging out there now could be very expensive and quite awkward. And I think Stephen Kenny was due to speak to media today, and I think one of the reasons he didn't is that the Robbie Keane situation is not resolved. The new interim CEO of the FAI, Gary Owens, on RT Radio yesterday, said that the door is still open, that they were hoping to talk to Robbie's agent. And I feel it would have been better for all concerned if they had that issue tied up as well. Because Stephen Kenny, let's be honest, is entitled to pick whoever he wants for his management team. And so Robbie Keane shouldn't be foisted on him. But this could be another very expensive contract. The FAI feel they're honour-bound, and they're honouring contracts, and that in itself is a good thing. Except, of course, that we know how cash-strapped the FAI are. They came so close to bankruptcy if it wasn't for what essentially is a government and UEFA bailout. So the sort of money that's been talked about for Robbie Keane's contract, the last 2 years of his contract, we're led to believe that he may have moved up to $250,000 a year. This is for a man who's currently assistant at Middlesbrough. Now, I think Robbie deserves the utmost respect for what he's done as a player, and he should be treated with respect in this regard. But I really wish it was wrapped up, because as it's left hanging there, it leaves a bit of a bad taste.
Liam Brady also joins us on the line. Liam, which is kind of more important, really, for Stephen Kenny to be able to bring in his own people, or for Robbie Keane to be treated the way that he probably should be as someone who's given so much to Irish football?
Well, I think it's most important that Stephen Kenny has his own people. Like this thing was already decided before we even put Mick McCarthy in as manager, and this was the mess that people have inherited now coming into the FAI, the likes of Barrett and Owens. They've had to sort all this mess out, and this is another one of the things that they have to sort out. I would agree with Tony that it would be best for everybody if it could be agreed quickly and in a friendly fashion, and keep let Stephen Kenny have the team he wants and find a solution with Robbie Keane, as whether he does something else in the FAI or whether he agrees to go quietly and so forth. But it's just another example of the mess that people have come into the FAI and have to clean up.
David Snaid also joins us on the line, football journalist. David, it has got quite awkward, though. We've seen Robbie Keane's wife today retweeting a lot of support for her husband. So kind of that it would indicate that things are not happy behind the scenes.
Yeah, you know you've lost a battle when you're resorting to Twitter. But what I would say is, and even what Tony was talking about there, like I've just been chatting to people at the FAI today, and it's family in Robbie's court. Like, Gary Owens is the one who is leading this from the FAI. He's obviously the interim chief executive, and he's the one who has left it to Robbie and his agent to actually discuss things. At the moment, I don't think there's actually a meeting planned in the immediate short term, which is possibly one of the reasons why Stephen Kenny didn't speak to media today. And it's just a mess that's been left over. But what should be kind of looked on positively here is the fact that Stephen Kenny has acted decisively on this. Like, he hasn't had someone forced on him who he clearly didn't want to be as part of his ticket. And we've been talking about this being the start of a new era, and the fact that Stephen has got essentially Robbie out of his coaching staff reinforces that. Like, Robbie's contract is separate. It was always separate to even Mick McCarthy's. Again, it goes on for another couple of years, and it just shows that kind of Stephen, when he's in his job now, even though people are kind of maybe doubt his credentials, that it's not someone who's going to be pressured into taking something that he's not happy with. You know, he's by no means a yes man. He feels this, and he does have the job on merit, and he's obviously taken this decision, and he's standing by it. And it's up to the FAI, that are people who are in charge there now, to make sure that this situation with Robbie does go away as quickly as possible. And it's sad to talk about it like that, but that's just what has to happen for Irish football to move on.
Liam, as look, Stephen Kenny does have the job on merit, and whatever happens with Robbie Keane happens with Robbie Keane. But what is Stephen Kenny going to bring to the Irish setup? What sort of a game will he play? What will he do with the team?
Well, I think he's very much his own man. Everybody knows that. He's done a wonderful job with Dundalk. I think he's won 5 league championships, 4 with Dundalk, 1 with Bohemians, lots of cup finals as well. Ruby, really a lot of success. But also doing well in Europe with very limited resources by playing really entertaining, good football, playing football out from the back. Players showing confidence to accept responsibility, to get on the ball. So, as Tony said, he's coming in on merit. He deserves a chance to get the job. He's getting it in unusual circumstances, but I think he's very much his own man. I think also the decision about Robbie Keane demonstrates that. And I think he's someone to look forward to. I feel a bit for Mick McCarthy. I think the business was still unfinished. He still had a very good chance of qualifying for the Euros, but you know, with this coronavirus, it's thrown everything up in the air. And the FAI have acted decisively. They must have had a terrible mess to clean up when they got in there. And I'll go back to Robbie Keane. This is one of the things that they have to resolve. But I think Stephen Kenny is going to bring an entertaining kind of football. I think what we're going to see, Ruby, is a lot of the players that he's just tried and tested at under 21 level, where results were very, very good. In 7 games, we lost only 1 match, playing very entertaining football. What you'd like to see now, when football resumes, we don't know when that is, but a lot of these players that have been playing for him at under 21 level will be somehow playing at least championship football in the first team. It's going to be very difficult for Stephen to pick players who are not playing regularly in the first team, let's say in the championship or in the premiership.
Tony, who do you think, I suppose a good way of putting it, is going to win with Stephen Kenny's campaign here? What players do you think are going to maybe make that step up, or who will we see more of?
First of all, I don't think, you know, as much as we wish Stephen every success, and of course we do, and there's quite a wave of optimism as he's coming in, but we, you know, he's not a magician. He's not going to be able to overnight turn things around. I mean, we have had managers in the past, the likes of Martin O'Neill and Trapattoni, who've, you know, had massive success in the game. So we have to take that into account and, you know, not expect miracles, but we are hoping for, I suppose, a more expansive approach. So I think some of the younger players that he has seen at under 21 level, the sort of type of player that he likes, the likes of Adam Ida, I think will be important to him if he continues to get some game time, as Liam says, the likes of Aaron Connolly, Troy Parrott, we'd also all hope comes through to solve our goal scoring problems, Michael Obafemi, Jason Malumbi, who's been terrific on loan at Millwall at the moment. They have been instilled already in the Stephen Kenny sort of way, and he's brought that to all the teams he's managed. You know, when he went to Dundalk, they were on their knees, and yet very, very quickly he turned them around. He himself has said, you know, he has managed 46 European fixtures, so he has been involved in Champions League and Europa League, when famously Dundalk got to the group stages of the Europa League, and they were up against top teams. You know, Zenit St. Petersburg had top players, AZ Alkmaar, they got a point away from home there, and they won it at home, Maccabi Tel Aviv. So, like, he has shown he's taken on opposition that's better than them, and in a lot of cases when Ireland are playing, we expect the opposition to be better than us, and has taken the game to the opposition. So I would like to think that we can expect that from him as well. Before we get away from Mick, by the way, and I echo what Liam says, I think he's shown integrity in the way he's left his post as well. And I think if we're talking about the mess that was around the FAI, Mick's first game in his second stint in charge, that famous game in Gibraltar, that was the night that the news broke of John Delaney and his €100,000 loan to the association, and the Sunday Times investigation and the High Court injunction and all of that. And Mick must have been wondering, what the hell, I've come in here to try and take a team with no preparation, you know, to the European Championships, and all of this stuff going on in the background, and he managed to keep the players away from it and the focus on the games. People talk about style of play and whatnot, but in the maelstrom that was going on, and I can't stress that enough, in the FAI at the time, it would have been, you know, it would have tested any manager's ability to manage above and around him as well as on the field.
Yeah, just on that, David, like, with all the, we're chatting about the mess and there's plenty more to be tidied up. It is an awful lot of pressure to put Stephen Kenny straight in, with the pressure that's going to be around him now with qualification, with the Slovakia game, with all that. He's going straight in to pressure football, isn't he?
That's it. And, well, talking about pressure football, it's all he's had it at a different level in the League of Ireland. But what could be of benefit to him is the fact that the playoffs for Euro probably is going to be looking likely now, that's going to be in November, so all going well, because we're still kind of up in the air and when games will actually definitely be back. But if we're going by the schedule that's in place with the Nations League, he could have hopefully six competitive games in the Nations League before we have that Euro playoff with Slovakia. So that's going to be a big thing. And even what Liam said, and also what Tony has said, the fact that he's going to be coming in with a base of lads from the 21s as well, who you would imagine that will get promoted. And the whole kind of debate of, well, will players take to Stephen Kenny because he hasn't managed at the Championship or the Premier League, that's kind of null and void now, really, because there's fellas there who totally know what he's about and have been won over. And a lot of people who are alongside him in his coaching staff, with Damien Duff, who's really well regarded at Celtic, he's going to be coming in. People will see him and be like, right, he's part of this. It's a serious operation, of course. Then you've got Keith Andrews, who obviously worked with Damien on his pro licence too. So, like, there's such a high calibre of people who are going to be involved in it. And if you look at it, it just does look as if it is going to be the start, you would hope, of just a long-term plan.
It seems to me that
it can be difficult.
For a long time, Irish, the senior team played in a different style, all the way back to Jack Charlton, you could say, to every other team. And, yeah, you know, we wouldn't follow the Dutch model or the Belgian model. Whereas recently, you know, from the bottom of the pyramid up, we have had teams trying to play a certain way. So you look at the teams that Colin O'Brien has had, and Tom Mohan, and Jim Crawford, and Keith Andrews, and there seems to be a bit more joined up thinking that was never the case in the FAI, that we can try and develop players. Obviously, most of our players in the past past developed across the water in England had their finishing school, if you like, because they went away so early. That's not the case anymore because it's harder to get a gig. So you'd like to think that we can develop better coaching structures through the League of Ireland and develop our players at the different age group levels, and it seems to be happening. And what's, I think, lucky for Stephen, perhaps, you know, at the end of all this, this might work out okay. There's friendly games due to be in the autumn period as well, if football goes ahead. So as well as those Nation League games against Bulgaria and Finland and Wales, there's friendly matches to be slotted in as well. So in fact, David, he could have 8 matches before the Slovakia playoff for the European Championships.
But Liam, when you look at this, Stephen Kenny has done a fairly good job, with the best of respect to the League of Ireland, with pretty ordinary enough teams and turned them into winning machines. When he gets a better class of player now with the international team, could he not drive them on as well?
Well, that's what we're hoping, Ruby. And, you know, he's there on merit because of his track record with Dundalk and the style of football that he plays. But you have to put a question mark as well. We have a pretty limited team. You know, you look at the Welsh team and you compare them to the Irish team, there wouldn't be a lot in it, but they have got Gareth Bale and they've got Aaron Ramsey. You've got Gareth Bale is playing at Real Madrid. They've got Aaron Ramsey. It was once with Arsenal, he's now playing with Juventus. Those two players have made the difference for Wales in the last 4 or 5 years where they've been very successful. In the Irish team, we haven't got anybody like that. We're hoping that the younger players may develop into something special, but as yet, there's still big question marks. So you've got to take all that into consideration, Ruby. He's not got a magic wand.
Well, we definitely have hope anyway, guys. Thanks so much for joining me. David Snaid, Tony O'Donoghue and Liam Brady, we really appreciate you taking the calls. And just some breaking news, Liverpool have reversed their decision to furlough their staff and they have apologised to fans, I have to say. I saw that coming.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. Busy football chat there.
Yeah, it has been mad, isn't it?
Well, the big news is Liverpool reversing their decision to furlough their staff, which they should have never done in the first place. I think it was a big mistake from the club, and I'm glad to see that the common sense has prevailed. But I do think that they have damaged themselves a little bit by it because it doesn't reflect what the Liverpool club is about, their values and their morals and their ethics.
You kind of saw it coming though, didn't you? And to be fair, a few former players as well stepped up and said it's just not good enough.
Yeah, and rightly so.
Yeah.
Now, guys, I know that we are mad looking for good news stories because we have had no sport for so long now. I hope someone's keeping track of the days where we've had no sport. It's since Ruby was in Cheltenham. But anyway, I'll move on. And this week we
cheers,
got...
Marie.
This weekend we got a good news story and was provided to us by Sean O'Brien. He offered up his house to two nurses rent free and he joins us now on the line. Sean, how are you?
Hi, Marie. How are you?
Ruby,
Donica, how are you?
We're great, Sean, how are you?
Taking aim at Ruby here, so I'm happy out. He's not in the studio, so I can be very brave.
Right.
Seanie, we've seen you being a hero on the pitch for years, but an act of kindness like this is incredible from you. So you've basically left your apartment in Dublin out for two nurses.
Yeah, I suppose, firstly, I wouldn't even see it like that. It's something I think that I was kind of questioning, apartment blocks that were half empty or student accommodation and stuff. Why haven't they stepped in and done something? And I suppose I was coming home from London and I have my house up there for when I come back, like, et cetera. But considering I was going home and I was staying at home, I said I might as well throw it out there because... two of my best friends, both are one of their wives and the other fellow's girlfriends, are both nurses. And I kind of knew the situation they were in, travelling up and down from home. And one of them has stayed in the house previously to this when she's on night shifts and stuff, just because it's hard on them. And I just threw it out there because it might as well be going to some use. And two girls are in it now are very appreciative of it. And their own families have a few difficulties in terms of health as well. So I can't imagine them going home and with the fear of, spreading this virus that's going around.
you look fairly happy, or they look fairly happy with the picture I saw the other night anyway, Sean. They were fairly happy with it. And your own colleagues in London Irish have been doing some great work for the NHS as well.
Yeah, they have to start providing meals in the last week and a half now for the NHS, and it's grown massively. Ed Crossan, who's Mick's son, is driving the whole thing, and they're the owners of London Irish, and yeah, they've done serious work. I think the first day they had 400 meals to deliver, and I think by the Saturday they were up to nearly 900. And some of the players that are knocking around, etc., are giving a hand preparing meals, chopping onions, etc., for the chefs, because we have two chefs there full time anyway, for all our meals, etc. And they were wanting work, so they got lots of it, and you know, for a brilliant cause. And the boys are doing power work over there, so it's great.
Sean, it really hammers home how important sports clubs are in communities during times of need.
Yeah, it does too. You know, I suppose we live in a little bubble of sports people, and you know, at times it's selfish that we just think of sport and nothing else. And when something like this happens, you know, everyone rallies around, and everyone gives a hand as best they can. And you see lots of different challenges going around on social media now from sports clubs, both ladies and men's. And, you know, it's brilliant. It's a brilliant initiative and keeps everyone going as well. And all towards a good cause at the minute, mainly towards the medical sector, as we spoke about. So, you know, they're doing unbelievable work. I can't imagine the work they're doing at the minute. So they all need a pay rise after this, that's for sure, anyway, no matter what happens.
It's amazing, Seanie. Like, you know it better than anyone, identity and culture in a working environment is key. And maybe London Irish had lost that for a little while, but since yourself, Declan Kidney, Les Casey, hear of stuff like this that you're doing, that culture of the exiles is back, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it is. Like, there's a great, I suppose, a great environment. It's a great environment to be in. It's, you know, Decky is very good at creating that good mood in the camp, etc. And you know, that's running throughout the whole club now. You know, you go into the office there every day, and there's lots of crack to be had, and people are very open and willing to help. And you know, it's exactly what's happening now. Like, there's people rolling in behind everyone to give a hand as best they can over there. And you know, I suppose on the flip side of that then is that there's a lot of foreign players in the club that are kind of stuck in London. We're quite lucky, a few of us, that we can nip home, you know, an hour and on a flight and get out of there, where they can't really now. So you'd feel for them as well, with families, etc., and not being close to their parents and loved ones. But, you know, hopefully in the next month or so, things will get moving a little bit.
So what about you right now, Sean? I've seen some videos of you on Instagram, and your girlfriend, Mayo footballer Sarah Rowe, is interrupting your workouts. What have you been up to?
Yeah, well, I suppose we're quite lucky. Sarah got home out of Australia just about 2 weeks ago now, and obviously we had to go into isolation as such, and we're in Mayo, down in her home place, in her uncle's house, who gave us the house for a few weeks. And I had ordered gym equipment when I kind of knew the situation of what would be happening. I was at home on the farm for a week first, and I got lots of work done, thankfully, before I got up here. And I'd ordered some gym equipment then off MC Sport there in Dublin, and fairness to them, they got it delivered 2 days after to here. And so we've kind of stuck to our programs and that we have with our clubs, etc. And we're doing 2 and 3 sessions a day, and there's a running track within the 2 kilometres here of the house. And yeah, lots to do, really. So we've just been training and eating really well, and it's gas. Like, I was just saying yesterday, we're nearly in better shape now than we were when we were playing like 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Seanie, do you not think maybe if you'd stayed at home on the farm instead of using the tractor, you could have trained that way, no?
Yeah, well, this is a good point, Ruby, because the first day at home, I got a rude awakening. I took a bit of an old bun ditch down over it, and it was a stony ditch, and I had to replace a fence and some hedging on it. And the stake driver wasn't much use to me. I had to dig all the holes, and I tell you one thing, no weight session or fitness session. I was panting and spluttering by the end of the day. I ain't really doing it that evening, I can tell you.
That's what I mean, like a spade, a pickaxe and a sledgehammer. It's like, what weights would you want, like?
No, well, there is that element to it, that farmer strength, because I often say when you've been home for a few weeks, you'd be sore in different places than you would be in terms of doing your training programs, etc. So now that I have an opportunity to do both, I should come out with this stronger than ever.
Did you get handed a grenade there, Shawnee? Did they know you were coming back and they knew that was a balls of a job and just left it for you?
Yeah, well, there's been a few dirty jobs I have to do at home, but I don't mind anyway. I think one of the big things that we'll see of all this as well is the farming community. And what, I think a lot of people in the suits kind of overlook them at times, but they're keeping the show on the road and keeping us all fed at the minute. And it's a great lifestyle for them to have at the minute too, because they're out in the air, you can do a lot of it on your own, etc. And I found it very refreshing now being home for the week and just tipping away doing my own bits of jobs, and I loved it now.
You found it that refreshing, you headed off to Mayo.
He's got you.
Well, yeah, when nature calls, I suppose you have to go, so that was it.
And John, just on, like, we don't know when sport's going to be back, but you were back playing just before this happened. How is everything going with you fitness wise?
Yeah, absolutely great. I played 48 minutes, first run out against Sale. We got pumped in the end, but we delivered a good kind of first half through a few intercepts, etc. that had us under pressure. But no, very pleased, I suppose, to get back on the field. It was a long, just over 10 months of rehab, and a lot of work went into it. You know, some people said I was mad doing what I was doing, but no pain, no soreness, no anything after the game, and I was busy as well, and I was more pleased when I look back on the game itself. I was very happy with the way I went about what I did. So, and you know, I was looking forward to getting obviously more games in the coming weeks, but there's more important things in life now to be considering than rugby and sport, etc. But overall though, I was delighted, and fit as a fiddle though at the minute.
Shawnee, I thought I put in a few fair stints now at 4 and 5 months of rehab, but how did you stay mentally sane for 10 months doing rehab?
Yeah, it's. I suppose, you know, one thing is that I'm used to it. I know you've had a few bad ones as well, Ruby, and you've had 4 and 5 months, but I wasn't happy, I suppose. If I was happy with the way the last 2 years has went for me Ruby-wise, I would have just packed it in probably. But I wasn't, and I wasn't satisfied. And not that I've not approved to anyone, but I wanted it for myself. And I suppose the other thing was that no one had ever done it before either, with this, with the hip resurfacing. No one had come back from this injury and played a professional rugby game. So, you know, I had that in the back of my head as well. And I wasn't going to be stupid, obviously. If it wasn't going to work, it wasn't going to work. But the amount of work, I suppose, that went into it, and the transition between Leinster and for 3 months, and then over to London Irish to their physios, was brilliant. And as I got more and more back on the field, I felt more and more confident, and the actually hip became better the more I got into actually rugby stuff rather than just running and strength stuff. So, you know, it's been brilliant now, and it's given me a new lease of life. And you know, I can sleep well at night time now with no pain in my hip, and you know, there's a lot to be said for small wins like that as well. But no, I just wanted to give it my best shot, and if it wasn't good enough after the 9-10 months of rehab, whatever it was going to take, well then I could say, look, I turned the kitchen sink at it, and it wasn't good enough. But you know, I threw the kitchen sink at it, and it's plenty good enough, and that's what excites me about the future.
I could see why you did it. When you say hip resurfacing, was it a similar operation to Andy Murray's?
Yeah, exactly the same one. Exactly the same one. There's only one difference between mine and Andy Murray's, and that's the surgeon who did them. My surgeon was a fellow called Professor Griffin, and the way he done the surgery is a little bit different. Andy's, they cut through the muscle, etc., in the side of your leg, and and get into your joint that way, where my surgeon takes off the edge of your femur and he actually twists your hip out through your muscle. So I had no glute or any muscle whatsoever ripped through during the operation. And like when I woke up the next morning, for instance, I had no pain. And I was sitting on a bike within 2 hours of waking up the following day after the operation. I was up on a bike spinning and I couldn't get over it. And the surgeon came in and he grabbed my leg and said, "Jesus, that range is brilliant." I had about 35 degrees more range 2 days after than I had for 2 years previous. So an amazing surgery, and the way he done it as well definitely helped with how I came back from it, because the lack of scar tissue, etc., around that area. So it was brilliant, and he was brilliant at explaining everything to me from the word off as well. And, I owe him a great deal too.
Seanie, thanks so much for joining us. Honestly, a marine on the pitch every time when you go out. We're so proud of you when you go out. But what you've done for those two nurses as well, and giving up your apartment to put them out and leave them be heroes, we're so grateful to you. Thanks for joining us on Game On, and best of luck when you get back out there.
No bother. Thanks a million, guys.
See you, Seanie. Thank you.
Game On 2FM.